Supreme Emergency Exemption, The Rhetoric of Terror and Jihad and Communication. In order to persuade masses on the legitimacy of a war and to motivate them, political leaders used and still use the rhetoric of terror and the rhetoric of jihad, just like some extremist Muslim groups do. Guerrilla warfare, terrorism, and the rhetoric of jihad are the only tools to fight back for these Muslim groups against the might of Western powers, whom they see as the enemy. But by these rhetorics, many non-ethical and illegal things may be accepted as necessity. People who do not hesitate to kill civilians have to use various arguments to justify their actions. Rhetoric of jihad and rhetoric of terror are the perfect tools for this. A group usually starts killing or terrorizing non-combatants when their resistance is in a hopeless situation or worn out. In this hopeless situation, anything goes. Anything that is necessary to win becomes legitimate. This is called back to the wall argument by Michael Walzer. Walzer gives 1940s Great Britain as an example. When Great Britain was threatened by the Nazi Germany, a supreme emergency condition occurred which required to override the rights of innocent people and to shatter the war convention in order to survive. John Rawls explains this supreme emergency exemption situation as follows. This exemption allows us to set aside, in certain special circumstances, the strict status of civilians that normally prevents their being directly attacked in war. Andrew Fiala, too, writes that in a back-to-the-wall situation, supporters of terror, the war on terror or jihad, use the supreme emergency exemption to justify their actions. Supporters of Kantian ethics, on the other hand, do not accept any kind of exemption. For them, killing innocent people is always wrong. This leads us to philosophically ironic results, a dilemma. While the supreme emergency exemption is used by both sides to justify their violence, the Kantian approach is used by each side to blame the other. Since we are unlikely to reach a consensus about whether the acts of violence are ethically acceptable or not, we must first work to communicate between the civilizations. And then we must find concrete institutions to help us to build and maintain peace. For example, Hannah Arendt argues that the best way for individuals to be protected from harm is to actively join in the political processes. Thus, Muslims, where they live as minorities, should participate in the public and political spheres. More important is the participation of Muslim majority countries in international organizations. Muslims can benefit from the international organizations' protections, and by including Muslim countries, the organizations also can become more legitimate in the eyes of the Muslim masses. The communicative process can be formed on many levels, with or without the assistance or the limitations of the United Nations. Those who are eager from each side should ignore those who are not and try to improve this process. Derrida draws attention to those on the Muslim side who are trying to build communication instead of violence. He says, "We must help what is called Islam and what is called Arab to free themselves from such violent dogmatism. We must help those who are fighting heroically in this direction on the inside. Whether we are talking about politics in the narrow sense of the term or else about an interpretation of the Quran, we can improve the communicative process by fighting against wars, economic causes, and by encouraging the language of dialogue instead of the language of violence. If we can free ourselves from the rhetoric which is used as a marketing instrument for violence, we can get rid of a big obstacle on the road towards dialogue and peace."